Want to greet each one in Jesus' name this evening. Appreciated what was shared tonight. It's a lot of valuable instruction and God's timing, His ways. I would like to speak this evening on a subject that I used some time ago at OCC, and I apologize to a few of you that were there, but here we go again. 2 Kings chapter 5, we have the story of Naaman the Syrian, healed of leprosy, and I often have to think of one of my favorite verses in Romans, where it says that the things were written aforetime were written for our learning, and that we through patience and comfort of the scripture might have hope. And there are so many things that you can see in these layers here. We see here the story of a man that was healed, but there's much, much more there. And I'd just like to look at that. Now, I know all of us are familiar with this account. Most of us are. How many characters do we have here? Let's call them out. First of all, Naaman is the main character. Who else do we have in this story? The maid. Okay. There's two. Elisha. That's three. King. Israelite king. Syrian king. Two kings. Okay. Elisha's servant. Naaman's servant, Naaman's wife. Is there any others? Servants might be more than one, but I think we've got them all in there. And they all carry a pretty important place in this story. Let's read. Verse 1. Now Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and honorable, because by him the Lord had given him deliverance unto Syria. He was also a mighty man in valor, but he was a leper. And the Syrians had gone out by companies and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid. And she waited on Naaman's wife. And she said unto her mistress, "Would God my Lord were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy." And one went in and told his lord, saying, "Thus and thus saith the little maid that is of the house, that is of the land of Israel." And the king of Syria said, "Go to, go. I will send a letter unto the king of Israel." And he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 pieces of gold and 10 changes of raiment. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, "Now when this letter is come unto thee, behold, I have therewith sent Naaman my servant unto thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy." And it came to pass, when the king of Israel had read the letter, that he rent his clothes and said, "Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man doth send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy? Wherefore consider, I pray you, how he seeketh a quarrel against me." And it was so, when Elisha, the man of God, had heard the king of Israel had rent his clothes, that he sent unto the king, saying, "Wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel." I'd like to just stop there for a moment and consider this part. Here we have Naaman. It says a captain of the host of Syria. That was very likely the very highest position in the land outside of the king. He was a chief military man, and by the testimony of the writer here, it says that he was honorable, he was a man of valor, and so, you know, whatever you can say for the Syrians, they were probably. God used them sometimes in different ways, but here was a man that was an honorable man, but there's this big but in there, that he was a leper. And that was very, that nothing else mattered. when he was captain of the host, he was honorable, he was a man of valor, but the fact that he was a leper eliminated any advantage that he would have had there. And then it says that the Syrians had gone out and had brought away out of Israel a little maid, and she waited on Naaman's wife. And this person carries a lot of prominence in this story, because Jesus said when he was here that there were a lot of lepers in Israel at the time of Naaman the Syrian, but there was none cleansed except for Naaman. And how did this person ever conceive the idea that the prophet Elisha could heal her master, could heal Naaman? It's interesting to see this person of faith and a young person at that be told. And we see another tremendous lesson here. Jesus told us that unless you become as little children, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. So what did he mean? You know, one of the things that we see here, we see a complete lack of malice for the evil that had been done her. We see a complete an attitude of wanting to help this person. No doubt, you know, you young people, if you were taken from your parents, would you feel kindly to the people that did that to you? You know, that would be difficult. And yet, that's where she was. She felt kindly toward her master. And she told Naaman's wife, she said, Would God my Lord were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy. And she must have spoken with such confidence that she was taken seriously. And the story was credible. Probably they knew some of the history of Israel. Probably they knew some how God had worked in their ways some. But at any rate, there she was. You know, God has a lot of different ways of working. I was reading a story yesterday that reminded me of just a little bit of this, and I think Matt had shared this in children's class some time ago, but you know what? A good story is always good sharing again. And this is one that I thought was so interesting, of God's timing. And that was, you remember that story that this pilot that was flying for Wycliffe Bible Translators, that he stopped at a certain outpost, and they were working, they were kind of flying with from government outpost to military outpost to another, and these missionaries were using some of those routes to go. Anyhow, at one outpost, when he was on his way to pick up some passengers, man came running with four chickens, and he wanted him to take these chickens to an army colonel in another city. And before he left, there was another guy that came with two great big turtles, and he wanted him to carry those big turtles in there. And before he left, and before that was done, another guy came with a tiger in a basket, a little ocelot. I don't know what it was. He said it's a tiger. It's bigger than a wild, like a bobcat, but smaller than a panther. Anyhow, he promised him that he couldn't get out of that basket, but he loaded that in the cargo, behind the seat of the plane, and he took off. And when he took off, he was up just 15 minutes into his flight, and the chicken started squawking seriously. And he was a farm boy, and he knew what that sound was. He knew that chickens made that noise when they were in danger. And he looked back, and here this wildcat was getting out of its basket. And he threw some water at it, and it kind of scuttled to the corner, but pretty soon it came back determined to get some chickens. And the chickens got loose from their bindings, and they started flying all over the cabin, and he was flailing, and this cat was up there on its hind legs trying to catch him, and there was real bedlam there for a while. And finally, some of the chickens went underneath the seat where the radio connections were, and were messing around in there, and he was trying to call for help, and his wife was by the radio, and she said, "You sound like you're in a chicken coop with a wildcat," and had no idea that that's what he actually was. And so she said, "Well, I can't hear you because your connections are bad. I'll get so-and-so over," and he said, "Well, I'll just skip it." He couldn't talk. So the wildcat eventually got one of the chickens and would quiet it down and ate, and he ate that thing, and then he was going to come after the pilot. And he started reaching under the seat for him, and this guy would keep kicking his heels back at the cat. And right then, he saw a airstrip that he could land at. And he brought that plane down, and he called for help, and 12 people came out and jumped on the pontoon and nearly sank the whole plane, and wildcat pilot and everything. But he told them what kind of predicament he's in, and they had somebody come out and help him, and they lassoed the cat. But the very interesting thing was is that the commander at the base had heard him coming and was trying to radio him and said that there was a man that had been just stricken with a heart attack, and they were desperate to get him to a hospital. And but they couldn't make radio contact because these things were happening. But he landed anyhow because of that wildcat. And he says, "You know, it's so interesting that God used that wildcat and a scared pilot to bring this person to help this particular plane when he needed it to this particular place." And 2 hours later, the man was in the hospital. The chickens were delivered, and the wildcat was delivered, as well as the turtles. And so everything worked out. But that was a beautiful story of God's timing. God's timing in a perfect place. Well, that's a little bit the way this maid was. This maid had a tremendous opportunity to show Syria, the honorable men of Syria, the king of Syria, and Naaman, the captain of the host, who the God of Israel was, in a very definite way. She didn't know it. She just said that, "You know, I believe that if Naaman was there, that he could be healed of his leprosy." She was at that perfect place. And so her words were taken seriously. And the king of Israel got a letter from the king of Syria saying that, I've sent Naaman to you to be healed of his leprosy." And how would that make the king of Israel feel? This was not a king that had any confidence in anything like that. He was not a good king. I'm sorry, I can't say who the king was right there. But he was obviously distressed, and he tore his clothes. And when Elisha heard that, he sent a message to him and told him to send Naaman to me, and he will know that there's a prophet in Israel. One of the very interesting things is that the king of Israel had said that this is just a ploy to make war, and this was probably common enough, but how do we know that it was not, his motive was not for war? What evidence do we have in this story that tells us that his motive was for healing? What would you say? Okay, he brought gifts. He brought a tremendous gift. I don't know what this would be worth in today's value, but it would be tremendous. But the 6,000 pieces of gold, 10 talents of silver, and 10 changes of raiment. We live in an age when clothing is relatively cheap, and most of us have many more changes than one, like they would have had in those days. The kings, of course, would have had more, but the common man had one change. And here he brought 10 changes of raiment and 6,000 pieces of gold and 10 talents of silver. And it shows that he would have valued this cure very highly. So in verse 9, it says, "So Naaman came with his horses and his chariot and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. And Elisha sent a messenger unto him, saying, Go and wash in Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean. But Naaman was wroth and went away and said, Behold, I thought, he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and strike his hand over the place and recover the leper. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? May not I wash in them and be clean? So he turned and went away in a rage. And his servants came near and spake unto him and said, My father, if the prophet had bid thee do some great thing, wouldest thou not have done it? How much rather then when he saith to thee, Wash and be clean? Then he went down and dipped himself 7 times in Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God. And his flesh came again, like unto the flesh of a little child, and he was clean." You know, those simple words are just beautiful when it says that this is what he did and this is what happened. But the foreground here, we have Naaman coming with a great show, and he had his own ideas of how Elisha was going to take this. He was anticipating a ceremony for the cure, and when that didn't happen, he was ready to throw the whole thing away. And maybe he had a little bit of hope with the word that the maid had, but he had his own ideas as well. And when it didn't go according to what he thought, he was ready to discard that and leave it. You know, what was standing in his way of healing? His big obstacle was his own ego, was his own pride, was his own ideas of his importance. And in spite of the fact that he was leprous, he that didn't deal with his ego and his self and his pride. And he thought of himself very highly, and he thought he knew how Elisha was going to do this. And when he simply sent a messenger out to him and told him, go dip in Jordan 7 times, that was highly offensive. And he had rivers back home. The Jordan River was reputed to be a muddy river, whereas rivers of Damascus and Syria had gravel bottoms and were clean and flowed nicely. The Jordan River is not muddy everywhere, but sometimes we hear songs about the muddy Jordan. But anyhow, the instructions were clear, and it was easy. It was too easy, and he thought it couldn't be done. And so he had to be persuaded. And he had to be persuaded by his servant. And his servants must have had courage foresight to approach their master in this way. You know, they played on his own sense of greatness there too. He said, if it would have been a hard thing, you would be doing it. But why not try this? It's so easy. And so through their persuasion, he went down. And it says he dipped himself seven times in Jordan according to the saying of the man of God, and his flesh came again like the flesh of a little child. Isn't that amazing? There it was. It happened just like it was promised. Now what does he say? And he returned, in verse 15, he returned to the man of God and all his company and came and stood before him and said, Behold, now I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. Now therefore I pray thee, take a blessing of thy servant. But he said, As the Lord liveth, before whom I stand, I will receive none. And he urged him to take it, but he refused. And Naaman said, Shall not there then, I pray thee, be given thy servant 2 mules burden of earth? For thy servant will henceforth offer neither burnt offering nor sacrifice unto other gods, but unto the Lord. In this thing the Lord pardoned thy servant, that when my master goeth into the house of Rimmon to worship there, and he leaneth on my hand, and I bow myself in the house of Rimmon, when I bow myself in the house of Rimmon, the Lord pardoned thy servant in this thing. And he said, Go in peace. So he departed from him a little way. You know, it's so interesting, the switch that we see happening here in this story. Barely persuaded to go to Jordan, and when he comes out clean, he's just a completely different person, a completely different attitude. He's so completely different that when he returns, he makes that tremendous confession where he says, Now I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. And several times in the history of the Bible and the history of the Old Testament there, we have different ones making those proclamations. Nebuchadnezzar was one. There's several times in Daniel where we have something similar to that. But that word, now I know. You know, some people say, back up again a little bit. He had experienced something that showed him that God was real. And he was grateful for it. And he was not going to let anything else persuade him from that. And so, like anybody would, he tried to give Elisha a gift. And I don't know why Elisha didn't take the gift. That's how he lived, by gifts of others. He was not out there earning his living like so many others did, but there he was. But he was not. He, for some reason, he wanted to leave that completely as God's gift to Naaman. And then Naaman makes this very interesting request. He wants to take 2 loads of dirt back to make an altar. And he's so completely switched that he won't even worship. He won't even... worship the Lord on his own soil. He wants to worship on Israel's soil. So, you know, before the river was repulsive to him, now he even wants to take the dirt back. Isn't that interesting? How a life that is changed. You know, he was so completely overwhelmed. And to me, that's a beautiful picture of a person that finds the Lord, and all the values change. Everything changes. Paul says that if a man be in Christ, he is a new creature. Old things are passed away, and behold, all things are become new. And it's a beautiful picture of values changing. He, you know, I don't think that soil was really worth anything as far as money-wise, but it meant a lot to him. And before that, he wanted nothing to do with the mud of Jordan. Well, I wish the story would end there, but it doesn't. It says he went back, and Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, verse 20, the man of God said, Behold, my master has spared Naaman this Syrian, in not receiving at his hands that which he brought. But as the Lord liveth, I will run after him and take somewhat of him. So Gehazi followed after Naaman. And when Naaman saw him running after him, he lighted down from the chariot to meet him and said, "Is all well?" And he said, "All is well. My master has sent me, saying, 'Behold, even now there come to me from Mount Ephraim two young men of the sons of the prophets. Give them, I pray thee, a talent of silver and two changes of garments.'" And Naaman said, "Be content, take two talents." And he urged him, and he bound two talents of silver in two bags and two changes of garments. And he laid them upon two of his servants, and they bare them before him. And when he came to the tower, he took them from their hand and bestowed them in the house. And he let them go, and they departed. But he went in and stood before his master, and Elisha said, "Whence comest thou, Gehazi?" And he said, "Thy servant went nowhither." And he said unto him, "Went not mine heart with thee when the man turned again from his chariot to meet thee? Is it a time to receive money and to receive garments and olive yards and vineyards and sheep and oxen and men servants and maid servants? The leprosy therefore of Naaman shall cleave unto thee and to thy seed forever." And he went out from his presence a leper as white as snow. Now, the last part of this chapter is sad, even more sad than what the beginning one was. Naaman was cleansed of his leprosy, but it went to Gehazi. And Gehazi was just the opposite of Naaman in so many ways. Naaman was a captain of the host of an ungodly nation. Gehazi was Elisha's servant, the prophet of God, the one that had done so many things. He was in the best environment that he could possibly be. He was in the best environment that was available. And yet, there was something wrong in his life. And he allowed this temptation to overtake him and to destroy him, both in every way that there was. And I believe that can be a lesson for us as well. You know, we sometimes, people in good positions can be destroyed by covetousness or by greed or by lying or some of those things that destroy, and it becomes a hindrance to all that are involved there. But Naaman was, his good spirit continued. When Gehazi came running after him, he was generous. He was a changed man. He was generous, and he sent back even more than he asked for. But it was Gehazi's downfall that he decided to take advantage of him in that way. Why didn't Gehazi know that Elisha would know everything he's doing? Why didn't he consider before he did this? You know, those are questions I can't answer. I don't know why, what he was thinking, but obviously, Elisha is reading his thoughts when he says, "Went not mine heart with thee? Is it time to receive money, to receive garments and olive yards and vineyards and sheep and oxen and men servants and maid servants?" You know, he told him that. He implied that this is not the time to do that kind of thing. When Brian was sharing our devotional this evening, talking about thirst, you know, we see Naaman as coming to a man that coming to a place where he was very thirsty for God, whereas Gehazi on the other side was trying out the things of this world to see if they would satisfy. And I enjoyed. This one concept or several concepts that C.S. Lewis had, that he says that material things will never satisfy. And you talk about that in people. You find people that have a lot, they're not satisfied. You people that have much have little, If they're looking for material things, it doesn't satisfy it. If they can have little, they're not satisfied. If they have a lot, they're not satisfied. And he uses that as an argument that, or as that proof that man is made for something far beyond material things. He uses it as proof that material things will never satisfy. We're made for something bigger than that, and as well as time. We're always surprised at the passage of time. And he says that that is indicating that we're made for something beyond time, bigger than time, and I think that's true. And so the only safe course that we can have to keep our values right, and that is to have them focused on thankfulness to what God has done for us and to live our life according to his will and according to his glory. Elisha was carefully doing that. The maid was carefully doing that. Naaman learned to do that, but Gehazi failed in that, and he suffered very much for it. So the story of Naaman being cured is a singular story, and yet I think the great person in this story is the maid that was that example of faith and was that example of no malice, of love, and of surrender to her master. Let's come before the Lord in prayer.